Hello, I'd like to welcome you to Understanding the World of Dogs. This is a live educational teletalk that is being recorded. The podcast is provided by Terry O'Hara and is the property of AnimalWise, LLC. Please do not duplicate, sell, or forward this recording. Any questions or comments regarding the content of this talk or animal communication and Terry's services can be directed to www.animalwise.com. That's AnimalWize.com. Enjoy the talk. We're glad you're listening. Today's talk, Understanding the World of Dogs, was inspired to me by my dog, Jake. Jake is my teacher and has been my teacher for many years. Jake was my dog of 14 years on the physical plane, and he passed away as an elder in 2007. He is quite an inspiration. He helped teach many of my students over the years, and he continues to inspire me. We are in the format of a teleclass to keep an opportunity available to all of you around the country. As many of you know, I teach classes locally. However, not everybody can attend those. So, and that's in Colorado, and now that I've moved to Oregon, they're also in Oregon. But I have clients nationwide, and many people have asked, you know, is there a way we can continue to learn from you beyond our consultations? And so I've created the teletalks. And they are a nice, convenient way to sit back and in the comfort of your own home, or if you're listening via podcast, you can be out for a walk or doing whatever you need to be doing and enjoying some talk about the topics of animals, which we all love. They're convenient, easy, and fun, and this is a nice opportunity to help all of us connect into the animal world. So this is live, and there are people on the call that are muted at this time, and there will be an available time at the end for questions and answers. And as we all know, being in the world of animals is a wonderful place to be. We enjoy the love of animals. We enjoy being around them. We enjoy how they make us feel. So it's time for you to kick back and enjoy, because we're going to have an enjoyable talk about understanding the world of dogs. So my dog, Jake, who has been my teacher, as I mentioned, has a message for all of you listeners. And he says, this is directly to you from your dogs. If you have dogs in your life, or if you've had them in the past, or if you have them in the future, or you just have doggy friends. And the message is, understand me as I am, for I am dog. And I'm going to repeat that. Understand me as I am, for I am dog. As we know, we all love dogs so very much. We want them to be as happy as possible. Fortunately for me, the clients that I work with adore their animals and are very good caregivers. And there are many, many, many people like this around the world who want to give the best possible life to their dogs. So this talk is to help you understand them perhaps a little differently, or begin to look at them differently and see how you can understand them more deeply, which will only enhance the quality of life that the two of you share, or however many dogs you have and you share. We all know the expression unconditional love. Dogs definitely give us unconditional love. However, as I teach in my classes, I do like people to start to think of that as true love, because there really are never conditions with animals, ever, ever, ever. So I believe what animals are here on the planet offering all of us is a pure love, a true love, a deep love, an honest love, a love that many of us don't find with the human beings in our lives. We may have animals that can touch a place in our hearts that our loved ones don't touch, whether it's our partners or our children or our siblings or our best friends. There seems to be a spot in a lot of our hearts where the animals know how to find it, and it's because we trust them, first of all, but it's also because their love is very pure and very true and very powerful. So we let that love in, and this is a celebration of that love. Also, when we have dogs in our lives, it's about relationships. The relationship between you and your dogs. Also, the relationship with your dogs and other people. Also, the relationship with your dogs and other dogs. And with your dogs and anybody else in the family or in their world. For example, my dogs have had relationships with my cats and my rabbits. So every relationship is going to be unique, no matter who they are relating with. And back to the comment from Jake, we got to remember, first and foremost, they are a dog, so they are going to enter every relationship as a dog. It's important to remember that dogs vary as much as people do. To understand them is to learn them as the individuals that they are. I'm going to repeat that. To understand dogs is to learn them as the individuals that they are. One of the common comments I hear from dogs during consultations is they don't want to be boxed into stereotypes. They ask people to stop seeing them as the breed that they are, or the size that they are, or their background, for example. Many people, unfortunately, stay stuck in their hearts about the drama and the trauma of their past, especially if they're a rescue. And animals are busy being in the moment. So dogs say to you, don't keep reliving my past. You don't have to tell the whole wide world that I was in a shelter and I was skinny and almost dying and had a horrible life. That's so much in the past that they don't want us to approach understanding them based on anything from their past or based on categories such as breed, size, etc. Instead, what they want you to do is they want you to realize, I need you to honor my lineage first and foremost. I'm a canine. And definitely I have a past, and it does affect who I am in the present, but just honor that. You don't have to worry about it, you don't have to fret about it, and you don't have to relive it over and over again in your mind, and you definitely don't have to tell others about it. And I want to come forward as a dog, is the message that they say, and I want to come forward fully and whole as a dog, and along with that comes instincts. So I am going to have dog behaviors, and I am going to have ways of behaving that may not make sense to your human head. So this talk is going to help us understand a little bit from their perspective why they do what they do. So one of the common requests I hear from dogs is, let me grow and change even if it confuses you. So sometimes people will say, I don't understand, you know, he used to be so friendly with dogs, and now he doesn't seem to like other dogs very much when we're out on walks. Well, maybe he's not in the mood. Maybe he's in pain in his body. Maybe he feels vulnerable. Maybe he hasn't been socialized enough. Maybe he just doesn't care about other dogs like he used to because he's older now. Or. There can be all kinds of reasons. So we have to remember that we change as we grow up, and we change as we age, and things that perhaps we loved 20 years ago we wouldn't even dream of doing today. And so we have to realize they change because they're on a spiritual journey just like us. Every being, I believe, is a spiritual being. And they come into this world as a dog with their spirit alive and well to have their journey, just like we come in as a human being to have our journey. So their request is, remember, I'm going to change, I'm going to grow, it's not all going to make sense, but I'm on a spiritual journey too. And they also want us to let them be who they are. Let their personality be who they are. Now, this doesn't mean we can't correct them or guide them or go through dog training and have high expectations of them. I really believe to have a quality relationship with dogs in your life, you really should have a well-behaved dog. And what that means is a good communication between you and your animal, because if you communicate with them well and you expect from them and you have guidelines and you train them, then it's a harmonious relationship from there on out. So I firmly believe in training. However, at the same time, we have to honor who they are individually. And so, as an example, I'm going to share my two dogs who were elders in 07 and have since passed. So one is Jake. Jake was a very deeply spiritual being. He was playful, and he was a dog, and he was happy. But people would often say when they met him, there was something very powerful they felt. Even people who had never done animal communication, when they come to my class as a beginner, they'd walk in the room and they'd say, wow, there's something about him. Well, he had a very powerful spiritual being in him. And you could feel it, you could sense it, you could benefit from it, you could enjoy it, etc. Then there was my other dog, Shiloh. Shiloh was all about play and fun and happiness and joy. And she didn't care about anything deep at all. It was very fun for me because she was almost the opposite of Jake. Not that Jake didn't play, but if I would take Shiloh to classes, she would be nothing but a disruption. I couldn't take her until she was a senior and slowed down. I mean, she was an Aussie, and Aussies don't slow down. You know, she slowed down about age 13 and passed at 15. But it wasn't just her energy that was distracting to people. She was distracting to herself. She didn't care. She wanted to kiss you and see if you wanted to play, and did you want to pet her belly? And she was all lighthearted and a delight, an absolute delight, but not deep and spiritual like Jake. So sometimes people say to me, you know, I have a couple dogs and a cat, or I have a few animals, and they'll often start to express guilt. I feel guilty because I have this special bond with one of them. And I say, don't feel guilty. It depends on what they're in your life to be sharing with you, as Jake was in my life to be my teacher. I had a much deeper bond with him than Shiloh. I didn't love either one of them less or more than the other, but the relationship was deeper. So remember to open your heart up to what the individual relationships are meant to be and explore them. And don't feel guilty. And if you have more than one dog, don't expect the relationship to match to the other dog. Sometimes it does, but often it does not. So remember, they're going to vary by breed and personality and life experiences and their spiritual journeys. And so if you understand them by learning them as the individual that they are, you will begin to not only understand canines and dogs, but you will understand your individuals, and they will begin to understand you more, and this opens up a much deeper, honest, communicative relationship. So as we begin to think about dogs and why they do what they do, I have a little story, and this story is going to be in my book in the future. And this story came through from a dog. And the title of this story that I'm going to read to you, it's just short, is I Am a Dog. Did I tell you that already? Sometimes I feel you forget that simple little fact when you look at me. It's so important we both remember, though, because it affects everything we do together. Last night, when we were strolling side by side, I wondered to myself, why do you need to be attached to me? What's that word again? Oh, yeah, leash. Are you afraid I will lose you? Because I have a great nose, and I can find your scent anywhere. Your freshly laundered clothes, recently washed hair. We need whoever's dog... Thank you. Your freshly laundered clothes, recently washed hair, and the funny smells you dab on your body still can't prevent me from finding you. So no worries, mate. I've got you covered. But that leads to my next question. Why do you react so strongly when I stop for a good sniff? It seems I can smell a bush, with your permission, but there is a limit to how long. Never have I quite figured out that timing, though. It seems on Saturdays I get opportunities for much longer visits with plant matter. Unless it's raining, you do seem to act as if you will melt when water is falling from the sky. Oh, but it's those quick jerks of the leash while I'm sniffing a dog. And I hear you say, that's enough. How do you know it's enough? Have you ever tried it? If not, which I suspect very highly is the likely reality here, then how could you possibly detect completion? Let me teach you. You know that box with moving colors on it that you watch? I think it's called EV or something. Well, I know for sure that I don't relate to it like you do, and there is no way I could tell you when you were done. That's what it's like for me, though. Just imagine me, the dog. I'm all comfy. I've set up a nice scenario by a polite hello with this dog that I've just greeted. My body language is telling the dog all is good. I feel good. We reach out to one another for a little frontal sniff, and we say hey. And lucky me, I get permission to continue. So I move in for a concentrated whiff of the other end. Ah, now comes the technicolor for dogs. I learned the dog peed recently, and the urine is a bit concentrated. So I say to the dog, hey man, do you drink enough water? Just a thought. Thought I'd mention it to you. And a response may or may not come my way. Depends on whose focus is where. More on focus later, because we don't want to lose you at this time. You know, you humans. Uh-huh, pee. He must have had peas. Not just peed, but I smell peas in his food. I knew it. You're a healthy dog. You must get good grub. Motioning in for yet another whiff, I sense worry, fear, and anxiety. Wow, man, I say to him, you better relax more. What's up? And the dog replies, I hate it when she's gone, and she left for 3 days. Oh, boy, me too. I know what you mean. That's hard for me when my human leaves. And now, out of good old canine habit, I lean in for yet more details. Enough, my human says. I hear, but, I try and say, I wasn't finished. Yank, and off we go. Hey, man, see you later, I say to the dog as we trot away. Sorry I couldn't stay and chat more. Good day, mate, replies my new yet temporary friend. So if you can imagine being a dog, this was one of my questions that was submitted in advance, why do dogs sniff butts? Because it's their world, and it tells them their world, and they're actually communicating, and they're taking in so many details. So when they see us staring at the television set, and we're taking in all those details, and we're enthralled, and we love what we're seeing, and it's just riveting. And the dog looks up and says, so are we done yet? I mean, the dog's not joining you in how riveted you feel, and nor are we going to join them in how riveted they feel with all the details they're getting. But dogs need the opportunity to sniff one another. So they're asking us, the canines of the world, to chill out about the butt-sniffing thing. That's a human issue. We're caught up as humans. And I'm going to give you some examples now as we go into a little bit more about behaviors. So sniffing, interactions, growling, playing, ignoring the other dog, etc. When you're trying to figure out your dogs and you're watching them, the most important thing is to watch the show. An example I have is a client who calls me about her yellow lab. And her yellow lab's about 85 pounds, so she's a big girl. And she runs up to greet everybody at the front door. And she's very happy to have company. She's a very sweet girl, a very loving girl, a very social girl. However, she runs up to the front door as the people walk in the door, and they have two teenagers, so there's lots of people coming and going. And she'll run up, tail wagging, all happy, wiggly body, and then stops and barks at them. And she scares the people because it's a confusing message. So her human said, why does she do that? I can't understand it. She wants to go up and say hi, but then she barks, and she's got a loud, scary bark. It's not a happy bark. It's a protective bark. It is an intense, she stops in her tracks, almost skids on the floor, and bark, 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 right when the person's saying hi and reaching their hand out to her. So I had to ask her from her perspective, why do you do this? And she said, well, I'm very happy that they're there, but I'm the dog of the house, so I'm supposed to protect, right? So I asked the human, do you have that expectation of her? And she said, well, yes, we like the fact that we have a dog to protect our home. Well, then, she's doing what you want her to do. So we've been able to work with the dog and help the dog understand, well, the human will let you know when they feel unsafe. So if the human turns, whether it's one of the boys answering the door, and turns and says, it's okay, these are my pals, then you're off the hook. So we've taught her to pay attention to the human's signals because she wasn't sure when to protect and when not to protect. So she would run up as her happy self, but then kick into her responsible self of, oops, I'm supposed to be the scary dog. She'd be the scary dog for a moment, and then she'd want them to pet her. Well, meanwhile, she had scared most people back, and they weren't going to reach out and pet her. So one of the things that's helpful is to be clear with yourself of what do we want from our dogs. It's okay to want them to be protectors, and also ask them to pay attention to you as the cue. But if you're not giving them the cue, if all you do is say, no bark, no bark, no bark, or because you've got it in your head, oh, this is my friend Mary. You don't need to bark. Well, she doesn't know who just rang the doorbell. And she also doesn't know, is Mary coming in a bad mood? Has Mary got bad intentions? Just because it's Mary, I still have to assess things. So remember what you are thinking as you go to a door and a dog is barking. And turn to them and make sure you have a pattern of how do you tell them they're done. Do you tell them enough? Do you tell them sit? Do you tell them wait? And these are some training issues, of course, but they're also communication issues because animals read our minds all the time. So another example in regards to personalities, totally different situation. One of my dogs from the past, his name was Keisha, and people used to tease me. I had him from my age of 14 to my age of 28, so he was very much a part of my growing up, and he was my boy, and he was all dog in regards to the fact that all he wanted to do was be with me and be faithful and loyal. He didn't care about other dogs, never did, even when he was a puppy. He'd play a little bit, but dogs weren't his thing. And most people, too, unless they had food. If somebody wanted to give him a treat, he would take a treat. But for the most part, his whole reason for existing was to hang out with me. He decided that when he came into the world. I didn't expect that from him. I didn't need that. But I needed him, and he really helped me through my teenage years quite a bit. And he was always, always, always there for me, and in a way that the humans in my world were not. So he came in with his purpose, and he did a wonderful job of it. But I used to expect him to like other dogs. I'd try and try and try. Well, here's a dog. Don't you want to meet him? And he'd say, no. And I'd say, are you sure? No, don't want to. So I had to sit back and learn his personality and just finally tell people, he's not into other dogs. He's not into people, because a friend would come over and say, oh, hi, Keisha, how are you? And he'd walk by like they never even spoke to him. And I'd say, don't take it personally. He's just not into people. So sometimes it's helpful to just learn the personality and the preferences of your dog and not judge them, but just accept them. Some things can change, like if you have a dog that's scared of people and you want to help socialize them, absolutely you want to help that happen. You want to help them improve. But there is a fine line sometimes between, you know, well, that's their personality. And I do hear questions a lot of the time from clients, and they'll say, well, why does he do this? And he'll say, well, I don't know, I just do. Sometimes there's not a, you know, deep and powerful meaning to their actions. Sometimes it's just who they are. So if you stop and think of yourself, and you think of the funny things us humans do, and, you know, when you meet somebody and they do something different than you, a human, and you think, wow, I would have never done it like that, or I would have never spoken to a person like that, or I can't believe she reached out and hugged that person and just met her. I can't hug somebody right away. Or whatever you're comparing yourself to another human, remember, do the same thing with a dog. What are your expectations of dog, the canine, versus the expectations of your companion? And another example when we're learning about different personalities is purposes. So I have another client, and she has a border collie, and every time we check in with her on anything from her diet to why she didn't get along with one particular dog in the park because she likes the dog so much, or whatever the client is calling about, she's worked with me for many years since she rescued this dog, and her answer is almost always, well, that's my job. She's very intense. She is a border collie. Now, this is a breed, and this is a breed issue. But there's also personality. She loves to serve her human. So do those kind of breeds. But I feel like we have a dog that was rescued who was in a very terrible situation, and a human who helped save her life and learned how to do it correctly and didn't do it all drawn out, dramatic, tell the whole world, but just instilled confidence in her through love and socializing, etc. And this girl, all she wants to do is serve her human. Now, very different than my dog, Keisha. He was there to hang out with me and be with me. And this girl, she wants to know, what do you need? Like, they go to the park. What do you need, Mom? Do you need me to check the periphery? Okay, I'll check the periphery. So one of the things that this client has had to learn is to give her dog instructions. You know what I need? When we get to the park, I need you to check the periphery, say hi to the dogs, let me know if you're having fun, bring me a ball. So she makes all of those her jobs. It might seem silly because those kind of things are going to happen anyhow, but this dog feels very important when her mom gives her jobs. So pay attention to, how does your dog want to please you? What do you sense about your dog? You know, sometimes people will say, well, all he wants to do is play ball. Well, is that true? Or does he feel he's serving you? Does he feel he's bringing you the ball because it always makes you smile when he does? Does he feel he's helping you smile? Does he feel he's helping that furrow come off of your forehead as you're fretting about something? So learn to look at, what are you doing with them, and why are you doing it, and what are you subtly doing that you might not be noticing or paying attention to or realizing, and what accidental messages might you be giving? It's actually fun. So you just start paying attention more to, how do I behave? How does the animal behave? How do we interact with each other? How do I influence what the animal is doing? And how does the animal influence what I'm doing? So you start to see it as a ongoing show. And you check in and you watch yourself and you watch your animal, and you'll learn amazing things. And then another issue about personality, which I think is very important, is to understand who they are. Because animals, just like children, for example, if you have two kids from the same family, and one is really outgoing and one is very shy, and people will say about the shy one, I don't know how she ended up so shy. The other one's so outgoing. So what? They're two different individuals. They came onto the planet as two different beings, two different spirits. They came for journeys that are probably very different from one another. And this, I tell people all the time, the same thing goes for animals. There are shy animals. There are some animals that are going to go to the doggy park and might want you to just sit back and pet them and let them watch at the doggy park for a while. And then there's other dogs that say, get me off the leash, get me off the leash. I got to dive in. I'm ready to play. But if we can just look at how do they approach things and what's their personality, we can honor how best to help them walk through the world and how best to understand how to train them. So, for example, a shy, sensitive dog does not need the same stern training as a bold, pushy dog. If you have a bold, pushy dog, you have to use a stern voice. You have to use a certain collar sometimes. You have to do what you have to do because they have a strong personality. If you have an animal with a soft, peaceful personality, often you just barely raise your voice and they look at you startled, like, oh my gosh, I've upset her, and then they got it. It's like, okay, changing my behavior right now. Got it. Got the message. So they're always going to be different. An example that I have of this is a friend of mine who has a black lab mix, And she's actually a pet therapy dog. This friend of mine is a hospice nurse, and she brought her to my class this past week, and I asked her to please bring her. I don't have dogs to bring to classes anymore, so now I borrow dogs, people and their dogs. And so she brought Marfa with her, and she's very social, and she's very sweet, and she wants to meet everyone, and she's shy. So it was interesting to watch how the people, because I said, I want you guys to just practice meeting her, and so she let her off leash, and she was very tentative and very shy, and automatically the people backed up their energies, and they just kind of reacted like, I think some of them took it personally, oh, she doesn't want to come over to me, oh, she doesn't like people, oh, and this was a part of the exercise, was what do we do when we're meeting somebody, and where do we go in our heads, and more importantly, where do we go in our behaviors? So rather than be patient with her and just say, it's okay, come on over, or none of them, I welcomed them to move around or do it. Not one of them got up and met her halfway, which I would have done. I would have gone a little way and maybe squatted down and said, I see you wagging your tail. I know you want to meet me, and I can tell you're a little shy, but I'll be right here, so if you want to come over at any point, come on over. So remember that when you notice something about a dog, especially another dog that you haven't known like you do your companions, check in and ask yourself, how am I reacting, first and foremost? Because they're busy wondering, why are we reacting, and what are we reacting to? And we might be reacting very appropriately, but a lot of times we're accidentally reacting before we even catch it. So a lot of times, the animals, dogs of the world, are requesting us, please don't react right away. Please don't decide in your head right away, I'm a certain way. If I'm a Rottweiler, don't decide you have to be careful because I might bite you, because I'm a little pussycat inside and I don't know why people are so scared of me. If I'm a little tiny poodle, don't decide I'm going to be yippy and nippy because I'm not like that. I barely bark. I don't like barking. That's not who I am. So catch yourselves in what we might decide. This will then clean the slate so you can be more open to learning the dogs as they are as individuals. So we're going to go on to another topic here. How do dogs perceive humans? So if we start, as I've been asking you, to think about how you're perceiving them and who they are, and we start to look at, okay, so how do they perceive us? First of all, they find us way too serious. And we are. We forget to play. We forget to have fun. We worry about all kinds of things that they couldn't even imagine worrying about. And most importantly, they wish we would be much more in the moment. So if you've come home from work and it's been a long day and you're tired, that's fine. That's who you are. But be in the moment. Don't be bringing work home with you. Don't be fretting in your head. Don't be judging yourself about, I don't know if I did okay, or I might have snapped at my coworker, or blah, 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 because the dog is sitting there wagging his tail saying, so glad you're home. What would you like to do now? And your head is busy still being in the past. So animals don't live in the past. They don't worry about the past. They don't fret about the future. They are very present, and they are in the moment. So they wonder why we aren't. And their perspective on us is we spend a lot of time out of the moment, and part of their job on the planet as animals who love us is to get us into the moment. So remember to allow them to pull you into the moment. It's usually a much happier place than where you might be in your head. They also observe us. So they watch us. They watch, what do? People will often say, boy, all I have to do is put my shoes on, and it's a certain pair of shoes that they go for a walk in, typically their tennis shoes or whatever, and all I have to do is put that pair of shoes on, and my dog starts running in circles and barking is so excited. Well, they've observed. You put your sandals on and you're grabbing your car keys, that's probably not the same signal of we're going for a walk. And so they observe us all the time. And not that you should be intimidated by that, but just know that they're very observant beings. Dogs love to study. They study everything. They study how the squirrel runs up the tree. They study how the person gets in bed at night. They study everything. So they are very observant. And they also learn our habits. They learn our strengths. They learn our weaknesses. They learn our needs for love. They learn our strong sides that are, as our instructor, they learn who we are when we say, no, I don't like that, or stop that, or get down off the couch, or so they see our strengths, and they also know our soft sides. They know when we give in. Anybody who's loved a dog can probably admit they know when they give in. I had a friend over last night to watch a movie, and she brought her dog, and her dog wanted to get up on the couch, and we don't allow dogs on the couch in this house because that's the cat zone. That's one way I honor the cats. I would love to have a dog cuddling me on the couch, but I don't do that, and I never have when I had dogs, so it's just a rule to honor the cats. And so she worked her mom and worked her mom and worked her mom. She tried to win her over, and she said, oh, my gosh, she's doing all the typical stuff, head on the lap, a little bit of a whimper, the soulful eyes, laying down and sighing and looking back. It was very fun to watch. It was very fun. And these were all the patterns that she's learned to do to say, can't I please get up on the couch? And I said, well, what's the rule in your house? And she said, well, sometimes I let her and sometimes I don't. So she's taught this dog to do antics to see if she can win her over. And most of the time it works, and sometimes it doesn't, because she also has cats. She has three cats, and she says, sometimes I want the cats to cuddle with me, and sometimes I want her to cuddle with me, which is fine. And it's okay to say, you know what, this time, no, but mean it, as opposed to, oh, I don't know, and the cats are here, but maybe they'll get off my lap, and then you can come, because the animals are reading our minds. Remember that. They're always reading our minds. Okay. And another example. This kind of ties in with the example I just gave you from last night. But I did have some clients of many years. They have two new dogs that they rescued about 4 or 5 months apart from one another from shelters. And they said, can you please tell them to not get on the furniture? So first of all, as an animal communicator, no, I don't tell animals what to do and what not to do. But what I will do is help them understand what is the human's perspective on the situation. So I said, no, I can't tell them to not get on the furniture, but what rule do you have in the house? And they said, well, at first we let them on the furniture because we felt bad because, you know, they'd been in shelters and we wanted to give them as much as possible, but now it's become a nightly ritual. And, you know, one is a couple, and the woman said, I have a recliner and it's just not that comfortable, and sometimes they scratch my leg. And I said, so you were inviting the dog up onto your lap, a 40-pound dog, to jump up onto your lap, squish into your lap in this chair, and get comfy. And it was working. And she said, yes. And I said, did it make you smile? And she said, yes, I loved it. And I said, and what made you change your mind? She said, well, you know, I just don't know if I want it every time. Well, okay, you're a human. You're allowed to change your mind. But have you explained that to the dog? And so she had not explained that to the dog. And so what they the next time I talked to them, they said, well, we changed the rule around here, and they're only allowed up when we invite them. Well, that was very confusing to them because they didn't understand when the invite was happening. So I said, what are you doing to show the invite? And she says, well, I usually just look over and smile. And I said, well, that's not an invite, because you look over and smile when they're doing something cute, or you look over and smile when you just heard something funny on the TV, or you look over and smile when you're just having a nice moment. So that doesn't tell them this is an invitation. So sometimes we as humans change our rules, which is absolutely fine, but we have to be clear with how are we communicating those new rules to the animal. And if you think in the future, for example, I hear this a lot, well, we always allowed the dog in the bed, but now we have a baby, and so the dog has to sleep on the floor. Well, how many years has the dog been sleeping in the bed? 7. And now all of a sudden you want the dog to understand they have to sleep on the floor, and you want them to not have an issue with the fact that the baby replaced them. So I tell people, young couples or whatever, make sure you set your rules to be realistic for the near future, if you can. I mean, we can always run into a different change. But for myself, with my dogs, with Jake and Shiloh, when I first got them, I just said, you know what? The furniture in the bed is what I call the dog-free zone, and I'm going to do this forevermore to honor the cats, because cats need their space too, and they need their special place. And my cats got along with my dogs. It wasn't about fighting or being scared or anything. It was just I could get on the floor with the dogs and have total love sessions. The cats needed to get higher up to totally relax, and when I didn't allow the dogs, it's just what worked. So that's my intention when I have animals. So the idea is to get as clear as you can about your intentions with the animals and what you expect from them. Okay, so playing and actions, things that they do, as people start to wonder, as people meet their animals and get to know them, they start to wonder, why do they do that? So obviously you need bonding time with your animals, which is relationship building. We've been talking a lot about relationships. And with dogs in particular, bonding time is a certain way of doing things. Often it's play. It's often ball or playing with the tug toy or going outside and running around. They wish we would run around with them more. They wonder why we stand still. Why do we always just stand still? So it's good for us to run around. It's good for us to dart around. I used to play tag with my dogs in the backyard, and I would dart around with them, and I would join their game. They taught me how to play their version of doggy tag, and I joined in, and they loved that. And Maybe I would do it for 5 minutes or 10 minutes, but I tell you what, every time I did, I was laughing out loud and having fun. I just got some fresh air in my lungs, increased my circulation. I mean, it was the best thing I could have done. Sometimes it would be brief. Sometimes it would be a long time. Sometimes it would be when the snow had just fallen and we'd throw snowballs. But they often wish we would join in the play, because sometimes people say, well, I throw the ball, but he just doesn't bring it back. Well, that might not be his game, first of all. Might not be what he wants. And he might want more interaction with you. So what do you see when you see two dogs playing? They're usually very interactive. When they're happy and they're totally comfortable, they jump on each other, they mouth each other, they roll, they tumble, they chase, they attack. That is dog play. So that's how dogs play, first and foremost. So if we're just standing still and tossing a toy, sure, it's fun, and sure, there are some dogs that adore it and will do it for, you know, ever until the cows fall from the sky. But there are many who just think it's kind of boring, and they wonder why we don't do something else. So, like, if you're going to go out in your yard and do some gardening, make it fun. Say, hey, let's go check out the bushes. Oh, I'm going to rake the leaves. Make part of your job be part of their fun. Come over here when I rake up the leaves, or I need you to come out here while I mow the lawn and, you know, watch from over there. And so some dogs are real good. They'll stay put if you've got the lawnmower going, or some it scares or whatever. But try and include them in things you need to get done, and you'll be surprised how often they find it to be playful and fun and interactive. And they also lighten up your world and help your chores can be more playful, fun, and interactive. And remember that they have their way of interacting. They have their way of, whether it's a bouncy play or a charging or whatever, so you are going to have to teach them guidelines. Dogs don't know what it means to jump up that it bothers you. I have a client here, and she just got a puppy, a little poodle, and she's 78 years old, and she just got a little puppy. And we talked about it beforehand, and her husband passed away, and she wanted a puppy. And so we talked very clearly about the responsibilities of a puppy and all of that. Well, within a week of having the puppy, she has called to say, I don't know if I've done the wrong thing. But her main issue was, I just don't want it jumping on everybody. Well, that's easy. We can work on that. You know, you can work with a trainer, which she was going to start a puppy training class, which was perfect. But we also talked about her expectations, and she has the right to expect that of the puppy. But at the same time, there's going to be a fine line where she's a baby, she's a puppy, she's little, she wants to get your attention, you're tall, she's trying to get up to you. So you have to teach them other options. So remember, as they are dogs, and we do want to honor who they are as dogs and what they do as dogs, that we also have the right as humans to say, ooh, that doesn't work for me, that hurts my legs. No, you can't be jumping on me. Or for me, with my dogs, if they bark too much, if they're playing in the house, I say, take it outside. That's too loud for me. I don't like it inside the house. It's just too loud. It hurts my ears. So you be honest with them, and you tell them why you don't like something instead of just no bark, because they think, okay, there she goes again barking at us about no bark, but I don't know why, and I don't know for how long, and I don't know what the reason was. So if we often tell them truthfully what works for us and what doesn't work for us, they can learn and they can get it. And again, that can go into training issues, and I do highly recommend that people work with trainers. I think it's very important. So I'm going to go into a couple of examples of questions here that people have asked, and then we will ask if there's any live questions on the call today. So one of them was asking me about why dogs sniff each other. And as I already shared the story of why they sniff each other, I just wanted to remind people that they are canines. And they live through the world through their nose. And so with us, we tend to take most things in through our eyes. So if you go into a party and you've never been there, what are you going to do? You're going to look around. You're going to look for maybe the punch on the table so you can go get something to drink. You might be very outgoing and be looking for a new friend. You might be very shy and looking for someone you already know so you can feel comfortable. You might be looking for a chair so you can just sit back and watch the scene. You might be looking for some food so you can have something in your hand so you feel like you're doing something. So you are automatically, once you walk into a situation as a human, whether you realize it or not, you are automatically assessing a lot with your eyes and deciding how to meet your needs, which is perfect. And they watch us do that. But we have to remember they do the same thing, but they do it with their nose. So if they go to a new situation, they have to assess with their nose. And yes, they use their ears, and yes, they use their eyes, and those are very important. And again, remember, a lot of this is general, and it can vary from personality to personality, and it can vary from breed to breed and spirit to spirit. However, in general, if we can just remember that they do absolutely need to explore with their nose. One of my pet peeves is if I go to a park or something and I see dogs out for a walk and I figure they've probably been in the house all day. Okay, it's 6:30 at night. They're out for their evening stroll. They've been waiting for their human to come home all day. And every time the dog stops to sniff, they jerk the leash. And I think that is so sad. Let them be the dog that they are and let them do their sniffing. And stop and take a break and pause and stretch or breathe or look at the sunshine or appreciate happiness and joy around you or whatever you need to do to allow them to have their dog experience in the way they do it. Because most of the time when we slow down, now if you're in a hurry and you have 5 minutes and it's a potty break because you live in a condo and you got to get to work and it's what we do every morning, then that's different. Of course, that's different. But try and honor what they need in the moment and remember, oh, what am I doing from my perspective as I expect them to not be sniffing? As I expect them, it's like, oh, you have to sniff that bush too? You just sniffed the last bush. Well, they often do get, as that fun story shared with you, technicolor. They do get stories. They get information. So to stop and sniff is like glancing into a window. If you like to stroll in a town, you're on vacation, and you like to window shop, and you just love looking into a window and going, oh, that's really cool. Look how they did that design. And oh, this is an art supply store. Oh, that's really fun. Look at the colors of the paints. Anything your eyes are taking in. Well, their nose is taking everything in with every sniff. So let them have that. Let them enjoy that. And I even say to my animals, ooh, that must have been good. What was there? And I see if I can enjoy it with them. That, you know, sometimes I'll say, okay, and it's okay to set a limit. I'll say, okay, we're moving now. I've let you sniff. We're going to move on now. I want to get to the leash-free area, or I want to get to the doggy park, or, you know, and tell them why we're moving on, not just because I'm impatient, but because there's a purpose for moving on, or because I have limited time, and today I told you it was a shorter walk, so I'll let you sniff some, but there's a compromise. So just explain to them what you need and why you need it. But do remember, it for them, it's window shopping, and it is a lot of fun. So let an animal sniff, but especially, let a dog sniff. Okay, and then another question that came through is, when I pet my dog just right, he really loves it. He has this strong need to lick me all of a sudden when I do. And he'll go belly up, but then he'll lick, 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 lick my hand, and he'll turn and lick me, and sometimes he'll just lick the air. And she says, why does he do this? I don't need him to stop. It's okay. I don't mind doggy licks. I don't mind doggy kisses at all. Some people do. Some people don't. She says, I don't mind, but I would just like to understand it, because she says it's just like turning on his tongue. I'll be petting him just right, and all of a sudden it's like someone turned on the tongue. So, first of all, it can be different for different animals, but on average, what that means is happiness and joy. It's pure happiness and joy. They are very tactile, and animals love to lick, and they love to taste. And they've learned, and in this case for her, her dog has learned that if her dog licks what I call frantically, she giggles out loud. She giggles, not just a little laugh, but she giggles and giggles, an adult woman, and she can get her adult woman to giggle. Now, that's a good accomplishment, if you ask me. So she will do this frantic licking. So then I ask the dog, how do you feel? Do you feel frantic? Because it appears to me you're frantic when you do this. And she says, yes. And I said, do you understand she doesn't need it to be frantic? You can slow it down. You can calm down. You can give her a couple licks, and she'll still smile and giggle and have fun with it. And she didn't realize that. It was like she had amped it up. Oh, she loved it when I lick, 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 lick. So she did it like that every time. And when we told her, oh, your mom does love that, but you don't have to do it like that every time. The report I got later when I talked to her for her next consult was, it's so much fun because now she'll lick and then look at me and I giggle and then I pet her some more and then she'll roll around and grab her toy and come back and lick me some more. So instead of frantic nonstop licking, because she thought that's what she needed to do in the joyous moment as a dog, she now incorporates the licking as a part of happiness and joy. So again, that's a fun example, and it was a good question of, you know, why do animals do what they do? And it can vary, but there also are good ways to love what they do, but you can moderate it some, or you can shift it some, if need be, or if the desire is there. Okay. And I'm looking at my questions. So there is one more question about walking, when you take dogs for walks. And then I will open up to the listeners and see if there's any live questions on the call, and then we'll wrap up. So when you take your dog for a walk and they are on a leash, people wonder, why do they behave so differently when we're on a leash than when they're off a leash. And I want you to just stop for a second and imagine me putting a collar around your neck, pretty tight, not so tight to choke you, but significantly firm, and then attaching something to it and controlling every move you make, or so it seems. So the energy, literally, that comes down off of your body, down your arm, through the leash, and into the dog is a very important message. Some people, if they've let's say their dog had a dog fight once, nothing bad, but they, you know, met a dog, and that dog turned and sniffed his butt too fast, and all of a sudden there was a rah, 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 rah. No blood, no puncture wounds, but a doggy, that's what I call a doggy fight, you know, just not an aggressive dog attack, but a dog fight. We have fights. We fight with friends. We fight with loved ones. We get grumpy. We get edgy, and so do they. But that person might forevermore, when they're out walking, be thinking about that. I don't want that to happen again. Oh, boy, here comes a dog. It's at the corner. Oh, that person looks so nice. They're going to want my dog to meet the dog. Oh, no, I'm not sure. And where's all this tension and worry and anxiety and perhaps fear go? It goes down the arm, through the leash, and to the dog. And so when they say, my dog's gotten more and more aggressive on a leash and I don't understand why, I get it, and the dog gets it, because the human is full of the energy. So, yes, they're different when we take them out for a walk, and yes, we have to have them on a leash to keep them safe most places, unless it's a safe, leash-free area. So leashes are important, but you can walk harmoniously with a dog on a leash and have a lot of happiness and joy. Correct them when you need to with a little yank of the leash or a tug, and allow them freedom and happiness and joy. But instruct them and use your words, because I find, I think this is another pet peeve of mine, is people forget they can talk out loud to their animals about a lot of things. They may not know all the words, but as you talk to your dogs, as you say things, you are naturally picturing things. So if I tell you I went for a walk and I saw a gorgeous waterfall, I don't have to say, wait, let me stop and visualize the waterfall so I can remember it to tell you about it. I'm naturally picturing it. So if you say to your dog, walk easy, you're naturally picturing them walking easy. If you say, don't pull, don't pull, don't pull, you're imagining them pulling and pulling and pulling. So think about the words that you use. Think about where your mind is when you're walking a dog on a leash. And think about what messages you're giving. It's very important to know that they can do a lot of instructions very easily. I always use easy. If I'm even with a dog approaching another dog, I'll just say easy. So my dogs remember, okay, back up a little bit. I don't have to pull so hard. I don't have to be quite so anxious. It also helps me feel in control of the situation rather than fearful. I also will say this way a lot of the time, because I watch people, if you just go to a street corner and watch people walking their dogs on leash, they're on the cell phone or they're talking to someone or they're spaced out, and they are yanking their dog, not aggressively and not abusively by any means, but they're going to turn left, and so they just yank them left. When the dog's busy sniffing a bush to the right, the dog doesn't know the human's planning on turning left, so why don't we tell them? Just tell them. I often will say, going left, going right. And they may not know at first what going left and going right means, but they learn it actually quite fast. And even if they don't learn left and right, they know, oops, when she says that, I should lift my head and pay attention to what we're doing next, because she's probably going to change her moves in a certain direction. I also say this way a lot. So if I'm trying to get my dog to follow me, and they've been sniffing the bush, and I say enough, or they're finished, and I want them to make from point A to point B, we're trying to cross the street, for example, while the light is green, I will say, this way, let's go, and I use that tone, and they trot right away with me, and they go, instead of just pulling them, because pulling them is not good. Pulling them doesn't make them feel safe. Pulling is not fun around your neck, and it doesn't teach them anything, and it doesn't create harmonious interactions. So dogs are very smart beings, and dogs ask us to understand who they are, and they ask us to talk with them, and they ask us to think about our behaviors and our habits and how we are with them. So they can figure us out. We can figure them out. We can guide them and be their teachers. They can guide us and be our teachers, and we can have a harmonious, happy relationship together. Now, with that, I would like to welcome you to unmute with *6 on your telephone or just your own mute button if that's what you have. And I would welcome you to participate with a comment or a question. And I know a couple people did have to leave the call early, so we have a few less on the call. But if you can speak up and let me know what you may want to comment on, what you've learned, or questions.
Terry, this is Gail. I wonder if I could ask a question.
Yes, please.
When you said dogs have their own spiritual journey for a lifetime, do our needs or our idiosyncrasies ever get in the way of their journeys?
Absolutely. Great question, that is. The answer is yes, and the follow-up to that is, but that's okay. Because we're learning and they're learning. So there's no perfect way. It's not like we have to get out of their way so they can do everything they're here to do. However, I will say, I'll answer this kind of in a broad perspective and then in a more focused perspective. In a broad perspective, a lot of times I will meet animals. For example, I just did a consult with a client of mine does pug rescue, and she's got several fosters right now. And one of them is 11 years old, and his elderly human companion passed away. And she says, Terry, he's just been withering ever since he's been with us, and we're happy, and we have a good household, and we give him lots of love, but he's withering. And so I asked him, what's going on for you? And he says, I feel complete. I came to be with my human, and he's done, and I'll be wrapping up. Now, does that mean she should suddenly rush him to the vet to, you know, he doesn't have any bad symptoms or anything. He's just wrapping up. His spiritual journey was to serve that person and to enjoy life with that person, and he felt very joyful and very good and very complete. Now, I asked him, how about if they found you a home with another elderly person? Would you maybe want to serve somebody else? Because you're only 11, and you could live, you know, a few more years. And he says, I hadn't thought about that. I was so focused on my spiritual journey and what I came to do. So she was very open. This is why she uses my services, to find out what the individuals would like or want or need in a new home. So she says, well, tell him that's what we'll work on, and he can give it a try. And if he's not happy or it doesn't work or it's too much trouble for him, we'll take him back, and he can just wind down here. That's fine. He can stay with us until he's done. But he wasn't sick, and it wasn't a bad thing. It was actually quite beautiful because he was proud of his life with his elder human. And he wasn't upset that his elder human died because he says, well, I knew that's what I came to do, was to be with him until he needed to go. So sometimes, that's a broad picture answer, sometimes their spiritual journey is very powerful and very complete. And they might go live with somebody else and live out their final days or their final months or their final years and have already accomplished their spiritual journey, so to speak. Doesn't mean they can't have more interaction and more spiritual experiences, but they can feel very accomplished. Or some of them do indeed pass on shortly after their humans pass on, as an example. Now, if we look at something specifically, like Jake, I look at Jake as my teacher. He came to be my teacher. Well, when he first came, I was being a professional health educator, college degree, working hard, long hours, and he came to tell me I was going to be a professional animal communicator. And I knew I could talk with animals, but I never thought it was going to be my profession. And I believe he had to work on me and work on me and work on me to finally get that was going to be my journey. And he was very patient, and he was very understanding. And there were times when I started telling people that I was taking classes, and they would say, where are you going to take a class? And I was even too shy to say it was animal communication. And Jake would nudge me and say, you know, you've got to tell them what you're doing. They need to know what you're doing. And so I told a couple friends, and then one friend said, well, talk with my animals. And I said, no, I don't think I do it that well, and that's not what I mean. I'm just doing it for me and my animals. And then she begged me to talk to her animals, and I did it, and she said, I want to pay you. And I said, no, you're absolutely not paying me. And I started doing consultations probably in about 1991, 92, for friends and family. And then in 93, people started paying me and insisting, because I said, no. And they were some family and friends, but also they were starting to tell people who were calling me. So without me even trying, and actually not kicking and screaming, because sometimes people say, how'd you get into this? I think, well, kind of kicking and screaming, because I wasn't planning on doing it. I wasn't even planning on outing myself, much less doing it publicly, much less doing it nationwide, and now I even have people in other countries that have consulted with me. Never, ever in my wildest dreams did I dream this. So was I getting in the way of Jake's journey? Absolutely. But it's okay, because he was tolerant of me. So yes, we can make mistakes, and we can stumble, and we can interfere, so to speak, with their spiritual journey, but I don't believe we can ever prevent them from having their spiritual journey. So for example, if a dog comes into the world and gets adopted, and it's not the family they're supposed to be with, I hear this a lot. I'll hear, well, you know, our neighbors gave him to us because they didn't want him, because they said he barked all the time, and he chewed everything up, and he peed in the house, and he was just terrible. And we've always loved him from next door, so we welcomed him to move in with us. He doesn't bark, he doesn't chew things, and he doesn't pee in the house. Well, he was trying to get to his right house. He was trying to get to his correct family. And so I believe, as I say to people often, as a spiritual being who's much less caught up in garbage like us humans, the animals will find their way. They will manifest their journey. I believe they're more powerful than we are in many ways in regards to their spiritual journey. So in the smaller perspective, can we interfere? A little bit. Can we throw them off track? Sure. Does it bother them? No. And are they powerful enough to get back on track and make sure they have the journey they came here to have? Yes, most of the time. Can something interrupt it? Absolutely. Can an accident happen? Yes. Sometimes they can get hit by a car and they weren't planning on it. It was a total accident. And you know what? They'll pop right back into another body and come back and either find the human they were supposed to be with or continue out whatever they were supposed to learn as a spiritual being. Does that answer that question, Gail?
Oh, that's very nice. Thank
you.
Okay.
Is there another question or comment or anything? And I pause for a while because sometimes people don't quite realize they're not unmuted. So if you are talking, I'm not hearing anybody right now.
Terry, this is
yes.
MJ.
Mm-hmm.
In a little what you had just spoken with the last question, can you make a comment about the surplus of animals and shelters, those spiritual beings? Is that part of their journey just to be in a shelter situation? There are so many extra dogs.
Mm-hmm. That's a very broad answered question that really, boy, that could be a whole talk, actually.
Yeah.
And a very good one, MJ. And thank you for asking that. And what I believe is that, and this is my personal philosophy on life and belief, and not everybody has to agree with this by any means. We all have our faiths. We all have our beliefs. But I believe everything is unfolding as it is supposed to. And that doesn't mean a dog deserves to be in a shelter. It doesn't mean a dog deserves to be hurt by anybody, any more so than a child deserves child abuse. I don't believe that is meant to be happening per se, but I do believe on the bigger scale, as a culture, for example, in the United States, we do the things the way we do because we are needing to learn all this to advance as a culture. As a country, we do things as a worldwide, I mean, as, you know, on the earth, everybody is experiencing things. There are people starving. There are people who have more than enough food. There are dogs that are starving. There are dogs that are so loved they're fed at the table. And so are there discrepancies? Absolutely. But that doesn't mean everybody's not able to embrace what they're going through and learn from it and grow if they can. And I believe sometimes when I've been in shelters or in zoos, I believe when a spirit is not feeling fulfilled and is not feeling it likes where it is or it's not meeting its destiny, I believe that they manifest out of their body as best as they can. And unfortunately, what makes me sad when they're in captivity like zoos, often it takes them many years to manifest that exit. Mm. Now, in the scheme of things, as a spirit, if you were to ask somebody that was an elephant on a chain in a zoo, and it took them 22 years to get out of that body, and they went off and they're a spirit and now they're a free elephant or they're whatever they are, because I firmly believe in reincarnation and spiritual journeys, you know, going on and on and on. Will that spirit say, well, it was horrible that I had to live 22 years? No, because in the scheme of things, that spirit had a journey. And it might have been hard, but maybe that spirit realized, you know, I had to have a contemplative life. I had to have time when I thought about things. Or, yes, that was hard, but I got out of it. Mm-hmm. So when I see the sad faces behind the bars, the first thing I think about is the responsibility we have as humans on this planet to stop the overpopulation, which I think many of us work towards, whether we support an organization or we spay our animal or we donate in certain ways. We all are working towards that. So in some ways, we're helping every animal in a shelter right now. We are. We can't fret and freak out and worry and be sad every day of our lives because there's sadness behind bars. That does nobody any good, nobody. I do have a client who rescues kitties and works at a shelter, and she is always worrying about everybody at the shelter. Well, first of all, that doesn't do anybody at home any good. She's not helping the ones at home any good by bringing worry and sadness home on a daily basis. It's not helping her spirit at all, and she's not benefiting the ones that she's worrying about. So she's better off, I tell her, go to the shelter, offer them love, offer them smiles, offer them joy. You will have just shifted their day, their hour, their week, whatever, and made life better for them. And even if they die the next day, it's a no-kill shelter, but even if they die the next day on their own, or they're sick, or they get put down because they had a disease or something, you will have offered them love and light and happiness and joy before they left. Isn't that better than worrying and being sad and trying to take on this burden that is impossible to heal as an individual? So that's kind of a roundabout way to answer your question, MJ, but just to remember that, yes, they all have spiritual journeys, and I can't say for everybody behind bars in cages right now, are they meant to be experiencing that? Probably not, most of them. But are they being present with it and taking from it whatever they can? Yes. And are they likely to perhaps have a wonderful human being come up and adopt them if they're embracing it as best as they can? Sure. If they're sick and they're ill, maybe they want out of that body. I always just honor. I don't let my preconceived notions. If I see that an animal is withering in a shelter and someone tells me, but he's probably going to die, I don't automatically go to sadness. I think, well, maybe this being wants another opportunity, doesn't want that broken body, doesn't want that broken heart. Maybe it's so brokenhearted that the family gave him up when they had their baby. It's his journey's complete, and he doesn't want to have another family. He doesn't trust humans now. I mean, we have to remember every being has their own journey, and we have to step out of our perspective about it and allow them to have it, if that helps.
A lot. Thank you.
Good. Good. And I think I'm going to wrap up, actually, with a really fun email that's going around right now, and maybe some of you have received it, because all of us animal lovers, we get all kinds of emails. I often don't have time to read the many that my loving clients send me, but I did find myself reading one the other day, and I absolutely loved it, and it was a story, and I don't know, MJ, you may have actually sent it to me for some reason. I'm thinking it may have been you. I'm not sure. But it was a story about a story told from the dog's perspective of rescuing the human at the shelter. And so he says, I looked out of the cage, and I saw the person walk up, and I saw and felt the sadness in their eyes, and I knew that person needed love. And then a tear fell from that person's eye and down that person's cheek, and I reached my paw out of the cage to reach out to that sad human. And the story goes on and on from the dog's perspective of how, you know, then I watched the person walk away and look back at me, and I sent more and more love, and I followed them with my eyes, and then they came back with an attendant, and the attendant got us out, and we walked together, and I knew that person needed love, so I jumped on that person and gave kisses, and it's the whole story from the dog's perspective of how it rescued the human, and I went home with that human, and I am serving that human with love every day until I can't be here anymore, because I've rescued that human. And I thought that that was a wonderful, wonderful way to look at it. Because, yes, we do need their love. We need the love of dogs. We need the pure love. We need it. We deserve it. Let's cherish it. Let's honor it. And let's celebrate it. So may all of you have a wonderful time with all of your loving dog companions. If you don't have dogs in your life at this time, like I don't, go get that doggy love from wherever you can. And enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. Thank you all very much for being here. And have a